I'm loving the pop off. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to this week's episode of the Box Out Boys. I am Skylar Riesberg, your co-host. I'm joined here with Spencer Clark, my fellow co-host, and we are so happy to be back. We are at the Final Four. It's been a crazy, hectic Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. I feel like we have so much to dissect, to talk about, and to, you know, maybe have debates about, because there's been a lot of talk about this and that, and about that player and this player, who's better, who's worse. But, you know, it's all up to God at the end of the day. Clark, how you doing, man?
Sensational.
Feel good. Living better. And that is a Drake Future reference right off the bat.
Just about to ask.
Yeah. So as you can see, I'm firing on all cylinders tonight. Probably no stopping me. Reminiscent of DJ Burns. No stopping that big motherfucker.
Okay. Are we getting right into it?
Future,
we got to get right into it. Everybody seems to be talking about this guy. He's America's sweetheart right now. Unless you're a Duke fan, then you probably want to do unspeakable things to him. But I just remind you, it's a game at the end of the day, man. Let's all get behind and jump on board the train that DJ Burns is about to steal when they play Purdue. Dude, that man is a walking animal. And what's insane is just looking at this NC State team, dude. Is this one of the craziest runs you can remember in recent history? Like, it's who else is up there? Like, within the last 10 years? Because, I mean,
not sure, there was VCU's. Kemba.
Of course. That's what this is on par with. Like, it's just a crazy UConn run like that. They weren't even supposed to be in the tournament. There was no way they were going to get an at-large unless they won the ACC tournament, which they almost knocked themselves out of multiple times. You know, right. Against Virginia, needed that guy to miss a free throw right at the end of the game. He did. And then they needed to bank a three, and they did. They were down against Louisville in their first game of that ACC tournament. They just seem unstoppable. NC State fans are saying it feels like 1983. Jimmy Galvano, his grave is just getting glorified right now. Talk to me.
His grave is. People are all over that. They're decorating it for him. It's eerily, it's similar. People are making that connection as they would. Dude, that team is fun. DJ Burns is a blast. He's like just a Jokic except black. I don't know. I didn't love saying that there, but it's true.
Hey, so Jokic, you saw Jokic shouted him out. Like, he's getting praise and love from Jokic, who isn't a big give lover. He doesn't really give the love.
I didn't even know Jokic was completely aware that college basketball was still existing. If it isn't forces, I didn't know that he was into it. So I'm happy to know that he recognizes the game of American college basketball. That's exciting to see.
So I was listening to something the week before, after Jack Gehlke and Oakland had lost to NC State. Gehlke was on, I think it was Titus's show, the Barstool affiliate show, where he's just asking him, you know, give me a player comp for DJ Burns. And he said playing against DJ Burns and guarding him, which I don't know why Jack Gehlke was, but when he was guarding him, it felt like he was playing like Jokic is what he said. He just compared his little left hook shot to Jokic. And, you know, there are a lot of, whoa, what are you saying right there? That's a little, you know, maybe he's here, but you're talking about one of the best in the world right now. And then Jokic shouts him out. It just feels like a full circle moment. And Jokic is giving his stamp of approval that DJ Burns is that guy. They just keep doing it, dude. And I don't know what we can say about the team, because there's no way you should have guessed this. If you guessed this, you were a little crazy to do this.
If you bet 100 on them from the first ACC tournament game and rolled it over till now, you'd have like $667,000.
I saw that. And that's just think about that. That's just, their money line odds are just so crazy. They're probably plus 300 every game. Probably not against Oakland, though. That was probably the one game they were favored in. They were probably favored, yeah. You'd think they're the higher seed.
You got to have fucking stone balls to keep rolling that over at this point. I don't think anyone did it, but you got to have fucking balls.
Well, we know Cerrone did it. We got to shout out him, a fellow member of the Pop Off Pod. Let's take a moment to shout out the Pop Off Pod. You know, we are the Box Out Boys, but we're an affiliate of a bigger brand here. So if you enjoy listening to us, listen to our other affiliate podcast, Rent Money, and just other Pop Off Pod episodes. You know, we talk about this, we talk about that, we talk about everything you need to hear in your life. Boom. Back to DJ Burns, though. In this NC State team.
They're fun. They play to do now.
Do you think there's something to be said about, so next year, we probably have our last senior, year of COVID eligibility next year.
Yep.
This team has DJ Burns. He's using his COVID year. He's like a six-year COVID guy.
He's a six-year. This is his third college.
DJ Horn, six-year COVID guy. And then who else? Yeah. They have a third COVID guy, Casey Morsell. That's just three COVID guys. I feel like if you're – with it being the last year, do you think we are going to? And if you don't think so, do you think we should see a rise in – just target these guys. Like target these older 25, 24-year-old individuals. Get them at your school and treat them like five stars while you have them for this next year.
If I have to watch college basketball next year of guys our age playing, it would literally make me want to kill myself. No. I think those dudes would go get fucking jobs and give up the dream. Here's the deal. There's some exceptions. For the most part, if you're playing basketball in your sixth year, at best you're going overseas. At worst, you're fucking probably dead in a ditch in 3 years.
But even with this NC State team, who has three COVID year eligibility guys, you know, just being in basketball too long, do you think that's more magic than it is a recipe to follow, a formula to follow?
Yes, 100%.
That's fair.
I don't think that's a winning formula. I think it's a lucky formula right now that's winning, but it's not a winning formula. No.
I think they are – I'm taking devil's advocate here. It feels like a winning formula where you just get guys with that much experience. You get into these moments in March, and they always talk about experience. Well, this is super experience. These are super seniors who I can't tell you what was going on with NC State. They started off the year hot. They got into some turmoil in the middle of the year. And then from everything I've watched, read, and heard is they just – simply started changing up their defense, started running different schemes, got into or got out of their zone, and it's completely made the difference. It took some adjusting in the ACC tourney, but dude, I bet against them every single game. I told certain individuals in the Pop Off Pod community that, hey, you need you're crazy for picking these guys at the national championship, and they just keep winning. With that being said, let's talk about their opponent. They beat Duke after a close first half. Duke just didn't have an answer the second half. It was embarrassing. If you weren't a Duke fan, you love to see it. Well, I got to ask you now, what were your thoughts in that game? Just, you know, with Duke going down, with the way the team played.
It was great. It was beautiful. It was so great. Good. It was everything that you want in a Duke end of the season game. I mean, that's a program that just can't seem to win big games anymore. It's unfortunate. They couldn't do it with Coach K, really. Shire can't do it. I think there has to start to be a discussion on whether we even really call them a blue blood anymore. I've heard the term poverty program kicked around. I've heard a pussy program kicked around. Both are agendas that I started to end in pushing.
I could get soft program. I could get behind soft program. You know, with John Shire, they do feel a little softer. He's always given interviews and in like the most I don't know if it's creepy or if it's like endearing. He's always doing a little half smile thing at the reporter he's talking to. And it's just always, it's not giving the same Coach K energy. I'll tell you that right now.
Duke is like that uncle that shows up to Christmas in a sweater vest and wants to tell you about the marathon he ran.
Just like so 10 uncool. years ago.
It's just so uncool.
Like back in the day, 10 years ago, you ran that marathon and
just
You know, what have they done recently? Nothing for their standards, let's say that. Even though they did win the national championship in, was it last 2015? 2014? Something
was
like
it 15
that.
Or 16? It was the Grayson Allen game. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, last 10 years, recent success, sure. But when you're a blue blood, you're just going to get dragged through the mud when you do not have success. And when you get beat to an 11 seed like NC State, you know, America loves to see it. Kyle Filipowski, he was pretty soft in the game, I will say. In his defense, I don't know many people that are able to go up against this 300-pound, 6'11", 6'8", you know, tall-ass motherfucker.
How many of you would it take to guard DJ Burns? If we threw four of you on him, are you locking him down?
No, I'd want at least a base of... I'd feel really good with a base of 10. Like, I get more people than are allowed on the court, right?
Yeah. You absolutely do.
I think, like, I'd feel good starting at a base 10 and then just going up. Just for, I guess, reference, I am a 6 foot, 170... to 180 pound. I've been going to 175 to 180 lately. So
you've been packing them on or losing them? You got a mindset right now, an ethic? Are you trying to gain weight, lose weight, bulk up for the summertime?
I lost a little bit of weight. I'm trying to bring that weight back up. Yeah, about a year ago, I was pushing around 200. I'm pretty sure, like getting up there, 195, 200.
A strong 200 to our listeners. A strong. Yeah.
It was all mass. If you've seen It's Always Sunny, just think of Mac saying mass. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. It was mass. And so losing that a little, now I'm trying to regrow that. You know, I'm feeling a little skinnier, and I want to add on that muscle. So I can take on DJ Burns, like we're talking about.
You look agile. You look agile right now as I'm looking at
you. I haven't been more agile in a while. I feel like Dara Nahara from Game of Thrones,
beautiful,
you know.
Beautiful
he just
reference.
Beats them
a warrior.
With speed.
You're a
he
warrior.
Beats you with speed. And that's how I'd have to beat DJ Burns at the end of the day. A base 10 of me, and then every other man I get, I feel even more better. But this is like a 1v10. So, I mean, that just speaks to the dominance. Now, if 10 of me can't do it, do you think one Edie can do it?
I don't know. I think he's going to give Edie trouble just because he... I don't know if I want to use the word elusive for a... 6'10", 275-pound guy, but he's kind of elusive. I mean, he gets up and under. I think he's going to give Edie trouble. I wish I could bet on which one of them gets to half court first every time they change possessions. That'd be so fun. And
who'd
I think
you bet
Edie
on?
I think Edie wins there.
Dude, DJ Burns, that's what's crazy is watching him. If you're just new, aren't familiar with his game, I just kind of zone in on him, and he seems pretty lackadaisical. You know, he's not in any rush to get back on defense, it seems like.
No.
He's just really effective and efficient at getting boards, putting up second chance points. And yeah, he has some silky assists. They look really nice. He's not a big assist guy, but if you try to play him that way by doubling him, he has the capacity to just dish it out to whoever he needs to. And so I think it's going to come down to fouls. Who's going to – one of these guys has to foul out this next game, right?
You know how the fouls are going to go. Everyone in America knows how fouls are going to get called. Edie.
So you think Edie's a foul hog? You think he's – oh, I heard a nickname.
I think Zach Edie could stab DJ Burns in the shoulder, and he might get to shoot two free throws.
Dude. Edie might. So you're on the disrespect. I've kind of shifted narratives. I'm respecting Edie a little more now that he's only getting hate.
I respect him too, but there are calls that you're like, that was, what the fuck was that about? I respect Edie. I think Purdue wins this game. I think Purdue wins this game. I think they win it fairly easy. I think they're that good this year. I think they're the only team that can really give UConn in trouble. So I think America kind of has to hope this is a Purdue UConn finals. I don't think this is our best Final Four we could have got.
Which is what we asked. Hey, I like our Final Four. If we run through it, I agree with you to an extent, but I do like Purdue. Hasn't been there since 1984. NC State,
right.
Or 1980, sorry. NC State hasn't been there since, I believe it was 84. 83. Alabama's never been there. First time. UConn, they kind of ruin all this because they were just fucking there. They were there last year, obviously. UConn, we're talking about all these other teams. Is it just inevitable, though? We picked last week UConn and Purdue meeting in the championship game. They both moved on. Duke did not move on like we thought, and North Carolina lost too. But I like Alabama and going up against UConn. Mark Sears seems like he's on a mission to just double bird everyone that says you can't. Mark Sears is phenomenal. He's like, don't doubt me.
There's a real Jalen Brunson type play to his game, and not just because they kind of look alike, but they play very similar, and they're both just winners. I like him a lot. But this UConn team is like, I don't even know how to describe them. They're terrifying.
Okay, real quick. I want to move on to UConn, Alabama, but I feel like I got last thoughts on Purdue, NC State here. I was just in awe of NC State or DJ Burns for the first 17 minutes of this pod. But honestly, as much as we doubt NC State, they keep proving us wrong. As much as I keep thinking, but this next game, they won't be able to match up with this guy. They keep proving me wrong. If DJ Burns isn't doing it for some reason, DJ Horn is doing it. It seems like they're on a magical run that we just, that nothing can stop them. But if anybody was going to do it, I'm with Zach Edey, Purdue. It's going to take everything, though. They're going to need their guards to be way more consistent and way much more of a factor than they were against Tennessee. Because that game, it just seemed like Tennessee had no answer on defense. They tried to throw bodies at him and go one-on-one with Zach Edey. Resulted in their three big men all getting in foul trouble, one fouling out, two others racking up four fouls. With the whole narrative against Edey that he's only good because he's tall and draws fouls, I would have said that earlier in the season too. I'm changing the narrative on it. I think he deserves a lot more respect. I don't think that the game translates to the NBA, but I think he's on the I'm proving people wrong tour. I just hope that the Final Four, winning that game against Tennessee, wasn't there. We did it. You know, we got over the hump. We're all good now. Because NC State is playing with house money, and they know they're the favorites, or that Purdue knows they're the favorites. It's going to be a bloodbath. I just want more respect on Edey's name. He's not just It's not just because he's getting fouls. Yeah, he's going to get fouled a ton, but because people are being violent with him in the game, I will say, you know, devil's advocate side, he's definitely not getting called for some of the fouls. It's pretty obvious, though, when he does them because he's a 7'4", 300-pound guy. You know, you're going to see any part of that body move and come down. So this game's watch closely at the beginning. How's the game officiated? And I think that's going to give you your answer pretty early on who's going to win, because it's going to be a game in the paint unless they decide to make it a game from the perimeter. But I think they'll try to both use their big man, DJ Burns and Zach Edey. So those are my thoughts. I think Purdue moves on, but I wouldn't be surprised if this magical run continued.
Did you see the video of Zach Edey taking a shorty into his room? Have you seen that video?
Yeah, I saw the video, and I saw that girl. We were talking about it yesterday. In that video, you see him go in the room, and then that girl in a crowd of other girls in a hallway just pans into her, just mouth wide open, can't believe what she's about to see.
Do you think that comes from a place of envy, or do you think she truly couldn't believe what she just witnessed? Or do you think she was competing, and that was her
losing? She's doing the logistics. She's doing the running the logistics in her head and going, I just can't imagine that big body with that little girl, who probably is a lot taller than we all thought in that video.
Let's just be frank. We all had a quick thought about the logistics of how that would go down.
Yeah, and I still don't know how.
I don't know how either. And I frankly don't want to think about it, but I definitely had a logistics thought where I thought, I didn't know. What if it was like he took her in there and was like showing her like his high school highlight tape? That would be the coolest thing he could have done.
Finger pointing at whoever posted up that video, just trying to make us all think one thing when, you know what, maybe it's Zach Edey, maybe he is saving it all for the court and he's just showing her the train collection or, you know, something that doesn't have a sexual innuendo when I say it.
Right. Yeah. Maybe it was super friendly. Maybe they were working on a class project. I'm going to choose to go that route.
These are all valid options, you know. You can't just take anything from a 3-second clip. But right. Zach Eadie is a dog. We know it. And I think we all learned a little something about him from that clip. And I think it's also crazy we got that clip. Kind of seems like
crazy.
Do you think it was from a viewpoint of malicious? Do you think it was a malicious viewpoint or a, like, hey, look at our boy?
That's a great question.
I'm going to say, I don't know. Why do you take that video? I don't know that I.
That's what I'm saying.
Put yourself in that shoes. If you take that video, I think it depends who you are. I'm going to guess that it was look at our boy. That's what I'm hoping it was.
I hope so, too, because otherwise you got to think it's somebody at Purdue, too. Right. You don't want to imagine anybody at the same school rooting on the big man's downfall, especially after the trials and tribulations he's been through. God damn.
Losing to a 16 seed growing up in Canada. He's come back from a lot. He's come back from a lot for sure. All right. I mean, let's just talk the other side. I don't know how much talk we're going to actually have.
On UConn, Alabama?
UConn might be the best basketball team, college basketball team in the last 20 years. Like, they're walking. They're also shooting, like, the fourth worst three-point percentage in all – would have ranked fourth worst in all of college basketball.
In the tournament, right? That's what you're talking about? So I saw that stat, too, where it was the gym in – the Boston and Brooklyn gyms – I believe those were the two locations they played in. They were shooting at the second and third lowest rate of basically they were looking at expected shot versus the actual percentage that went in. They expect around a 35-36 percentage of three-pointers to fall. I'm pretty sure UConn was sitting at about 27-28. It just makes it more impressive because at first I was like, why am I seeing this? What's the argument here? Are we trying to like – is UConn trying to say like we should be blowing teams out by more because – this has not been affecting you, even though you guys haven't been shooting well. I think that just speaks more to Donovan Klingon has just been tallying up his stats in this tournament, just playing at another level, which I didn't think was possible.
No, he looks phenomenal.
But he is. It's the tournament of big men right now, you know? The game really seems like it's gone back a few decades, and we're talking big men again. Who's Alabama's big man? It's not their go-to guy, that's for sure. No. So it's old school. We got the class of a little clash of old school versus new school here, or I guess modern school because it's not like it's new anymore. But
right, I just like, and we said, I don't know. I just don't see how Alabama wins this game. I don't know how anybody wins this game.
It just seems like, you know what, you're right. This is the stance we need to take because every week we talk about, you know, UConn. They're a good team. They're definitely inevitable, but like how close is this game going to be? And we're never talking like it's going to be a blowout, and it always ends up being a blowout of 13 points or more basically. Let's just chalk it up right here. Alabama is going to get blown out the door.
Yep.
UConn's going to absolutely run the floor again. They're going to cruise to the national championship where I hope – that it will be a little more contested, but this isn't the game. Mark Sears is a dog. He's obviously a little hurt. He didn't get SEC Player of the Year. But yeah, this is where we're at. Alabama is going to have to put up 100, and even then UConn might put up 120. That's how I see this game going.
I would take the over in this game.
Hammer the over. You've got to think, but does it scare you with the fact of, I mean, UConn's been – maybe the best defensive team. Not maybe. They are the best defensive team in the tournament right now, I believe, holding opponents to like 53 points, 54. So, it's incredible.
Yeah, they do everything so well. The Hurley tape a few years ago where he's like, get us now because we're coming, is maybe like the hardest press conference take ever now, looking back at it. We're coming.
And if they do go back to already
the year after he says that, they win one, and then if they go back-to-back, I mean, that gets me fucking fired up, and I'm not even a UConn guy.
There's a few things there. One, that would be the hardest edit to, like, the intro of a UConn hype tape right now, just having that line in there, especially if they win this one too. And let's not get ahead of ourselves here. This is a conversation for once this is done, not before this is done. But this might be – I mean, we're talking about the most dominant college basketball team in the modern era. If they win this back-to-back, you know, more than Florida, they've had a tough road. They got better. It's a conversation for when we get there, but it's crazy that we're even talking about it or looking at the fact that they could casually repeat again. You know, Alabama's never been to a Final Four. UConn's coming in. They got that experience. I don't know if nerves will come into play, but, you know, like they know about this. They get down. They're not scared. It always seems like they start off the game first 10, 15 minutes, you know, a little contested. And then because they fool you, they have us all fooled thinking this is going to be a good game. Second half, it's a bulldozer. It's just after the first 15, 10 minutes of them teasing us of we got a competitive game here, they just blow the doors out of the water. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, with the low shooting 3-point percentage that we talked about, I mean, they're just doing it in so many different ways. You have to beat them in three areas to even have a chance at beating them. It's nauseating to talk about. I'm going to be honest. I want them to lose.
The craziest thing, and people aren't talking about it, is if they win this year, I mean, they already, after last year's win, they had won 3 in 12 years. They'd won 25% in the last 12 years, and now they're looking to make it 4 out of 4 in 13 years. That's like, it's unprecedented. It's unbelievable. People aren't talking about it enough.
I would have to, if they win this year, we'll have to deep dive into, first of all, what makes a blue blood, get a concrete, definitive answer there, because I know it's out there. And then I don't ever say this, but if they win, we got to start having that conversation. UConn, welcome to the club. You are now a blue blood by these standards.
Yeah, it feels like people are gatekeeping the blue blood thing to be like, no, you had to be around and relevant in the 70s and 80s.
100%. I agree with that. Just after, it makes sense because the term, we don't have to get into it, but it makes sense when you just think about the history, all the teams that are blue bloods and that are consensus considered blue bloods. It's all from a coaching tree. That's basically what it is. And they were all very successful to start it off. And so now it just seems like a club that is unjoinable, but people want to have admittance open to. It's a whole conversation. But, I mean, that kind of gets us into – so we got Purdue. We got UConn meeting up. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if this magic ran out. But with that same blue blood conversation, I feel like it kind of applies to just the conferences in general. We got to have this debate here.
What do you mean by that?
You know, what do we got in there? We got an ACC team in. We got a Big Ten team in, an SEC team in, and a Big East team in. So with all the talk of everybody wants to crown their conference top dog, I totally get that. It's just a natural thing to do. It is. I think in college basketball, there's a lot more love for your conference because the history is very, very long and very solidified there. I mean, you got your Big East, your Big 12. I think the round robin comes into play.
Right. I think there's
we're having the best conference debate here.
There's a huge mutual respect amongst teams and their opponents from basketball because you see people more than once.
Right.
Sometimes you see them three times. So I think that plays a huge factor in it. But, like, there are teams, like, I wanted Houston to win. I like Houston. They were fun to compete against all year. They're a great team. It sucked that Jamal Shedd got hurt. If he doesn't go down, we're looking at a different Final Four, I think. But there are still teams that, like, I didn't fucking want Kansas to win. I wanted K-State to lose first round of the NIT. Like, there's still teams that you dislike and you don't want to see be good. But, like, I don't...
Oh, geez,
like,
you go 2-for-2 there? You get your wish both times? I mean, Kansas lost. K-State lost. They probably lost first round. Oh, look at you.
So, like, it's like that. Kansas. But then there's teams in the Big 12 that, like, I'll never buy another, like, Big 12 program's clothing, but, like, West Virginia, I've rooted for them. I've always liked them. I'll definitely root for them now with Darren DeFries and Tucker there. Possibly Omaha. I think that's where Omaha ends up, too. Like, that's a team I'll root for. I'll root for Houston. BYU, I'm indifferent. I will never root for Kansas or K-State, but that's just how I am. But I feel like people that can't root for, like, teams that they're not really in competition with in their conference. Pop off. Or like Houston winning had no difference on Iowa State, being an Iowa State fan.
I feel like it kind of gives your team too a little kind of pat on the back or justified reason of, you know, we were playing these teams that are doing so successful right now. And so that's got to mean something for our program too. Like our program's got to be good if we're competing against, right. you know, this great Houston team and this great Kansas yeah. team. So that elevates your team a little too. And so I think that's why conferences, because one, they play each other so much, and just because it does, you can make that argument that it does elevate your team as well with your conference being strong, just even more so than football or any other sport. Really, football is the only one that I think has a seat at this conversation table. But there's been a lot of talk of, you know, who's the best conference? Fuck this conference. They're bad. You know, yep. this other conference is weak. And I think it's all valid. I think after just racking my brain this whole week about, you know, what is the right response on this? It's just we as college basketball enthusiasts just get way too hyped about who is the best conference year in and year out. And we use the worst metrics or very cherry picked metrics to justify why one conference is better than the other. I don't think you can come out and say X conference is the best conference. Maybe they are one year. They're probably not going to be the next year. I think the variance is so much, and it's also one game. You know, basketball is a super, it's a chaotic sport. It's up and down. You know, you're going out there and you could have an off night. You know, you can beat them 9 out of 10 times, but they beat you at the game that it
any given counting.
And so the whole point here is that I don't want to hear this, that the Big 12 sucks. The Mountain West sucks. That the ACC really was underrated. Sure, your points are valid if you just use the one and done tournament of the March Madness. I think we all know that March Madness does not decide who the best team is, but it is a fun tournament that we all are super hyped about, and that is why we get so much enjoyment from it, is because, you know, anything can happen. We got NC State right here. You know, that's why we play the games. But there's only one game to be played. I don't think you can really come at a conference for, you know, having a down year, whatever yeah. you want to say. Yeah.
Hey, I hear you. I'm with
you. I'm just standing up for, I'm not saying the Big 12 is the best conference.
No, but you know,
I might say they're the deepest, but you know, that doesn't mean they're the best.
Right.
The ACC too, everyone's saying they're underrated. Should have gotten more bids. I can't argue with that, you know, with all the information we have, with some of the games played, but it's all decided before. You know, maybe Pitt should have got in. Maybe Syracuse should have got in. Wake Forest. Yeah, Wake Forest, kind of, they're still balling in the NIT. Maybe they should have gotten in. Maybe some more Big East teams should have gotten in, sure. But at the end of the day, you never know how those teams would have performed. It doesn't just mean because we put these teams in, oh yeah, we can have the what if all day, but you never know. I think that there is something wrong with the selection committee. They got to figure that out. I don't think it should just be based off this BPI you do, because obviously it's flawed and inaccurate, but I had to get that one off the chest and just basically too long, don't read. Just, it's not as big of a discrepancy as you think year to year. It's really fun to have these tournaments. What would you say the criteria here is? I mean, obviously out of conference games, but even those you don't. I think it's tough to decide for college basketball who's the best, just how we set it up in the schedule.
Yeah, I think it's tough to say. I mean, I think everybody plays some decently tough non-conference games. I think people really took advantage of the net rankings this year and just beat up on some teams. I know Iowa State did that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there just has to be such a big emphasis on how you do in your conference. Those, you're playing teams night in and night out that are, I'm going to call them your equals. They're your equals. So I think there has to just be a bigger emphasis on how you do against your conference. There's a reason you guys are conferenced together. There's a reason that there's the Big Six and there's teams that aren't in the Big Six.
I think that's super important. But on the flip side, there's also, you know, how do you garner like the ratings of your conference? You know, all the hype of your conference comes from basically how you've performed historically, you know, not just 1 year, but I feel like you kind of take in year in, year out for the past couple years. And, you know, your out-of-conference schedule decides kind of how strong the opponents you play in your conference are, if that makes sense.
Right. I think part of it has to come down to an eye test too. We can't just have analytic nerds saying, well, look at these numbers, look at these, and not watching games. Granted, I think they watch games. I know they watch the games, but how plugged in are they? I mean, are they watching two games and catching a team on two bad nights? And then that's their thought process on them. So I think there's got to be, I saw something floated around of old coaches maybe getting involved. And I think that's a slippery slope, but I don't think that's a terrible idea. Or I think you just let KenPom do the whole field.
Hey, he was pretty spot on this year. I think it was 14 of the 16 teams. 14 of his top 16 were all in the Sweet 16, something like that. He had a pretty good year. Big year for KenPom.
We can't let him get too strong, but if he just chose all 64, I think we'd have a great tournament.
We can't let anyone get too strong.
I'd like to talk some women's hoops before we depart this evening.
Great call.
Let's talk about the Dowling Catholic alum, Caitlin Clark.
Mm. So I imagine you watched the LSU game on Monday.
I did. How could you not? What a game.
From start to finish. God, did you feel... How did you... Because I know how I felt watching the game, you know, growing up in Iowa. I guess going to school with Caitlin, but never at the same time. I know how I felt, but how was that for you, seeing an Iowa victory, being an Iowa State fan?
You know, last night, I just can't stand Kim Mulkey, and Angel Reese bothers me too. So I was just kind of hoping for a good basketball game. I didn't really have a dog in the fight. I was hoping Van Lith would go for 40. That clearly didn't happen. She got cooked. She was also on an island. She was on an island. I don't know. Adjustments weren't great, but Caitlin Clark is also just that good.
I don't know where the hell they got the game plan for, let's just put our worst defender on their best player.
I don't know if she's their worst. I think she's their best defender, and I think Caitlin is just that much better.
I think Flage, just watching the game, it looked like Flage, nobody could lock her down. But I will say, I think Flage did a way better job because she has a little more length, has a little more, honestly, a little more athleticism. So it kind of works out putting that athletic girl, you know, to contest shots a little more. But, dude, Van Haley.
Yeah.
I hope you're doing okay. That was a tough game.
She's doing great. The thing about
the game, I feel like she had to have not been doing well last night.
She might have not been. The thing I didn't understand is they started switching everything in probably the last 5 minutes, and they had a little success with that because before Caitlin was just taking advantage of the screens where they were just confused on every screen and she'd just get a good look. So when they started switching every screen, they had a little bit better results. Still not great, but better than what they had. So I can't believe they didn't start doing that earlier.
That was amazing. Caitlin got off firing from the jump. Love to see that. And then, I mean, honestly, LSU had one moment at the end of the first quarter where they kind of came back, contested it, and then they kept it close right before half. It was tied up 45-45. But after that, it was really just smooth sailing for the most part. You know, as Bobby Knight says, the first 4 minutes of the second half are the most important part of the game. Iowa must have had that on their jerseys last night because they came out slinging again. Caitlin, what was it? 41 points, 10 assists, 11 assists. Dude, she had a masterful performance that on the big stage, you just love to see that because all the reviews are so positive. You just, like, that's the game you want to watch. You want her to live up to that moment. And that was a legacy game for her. Just like Edie versus Tennessee, that was a legacy game. And she got a revenge. As much as they try to downplay that, the revenge angle, which I don't get at all, even if there's no beef between Caitlin and Angel, like, they still beat them in the national championship last year. This is total revenge game, dude.
There's a little bit of a revenge aspect.
100%. I don't get why they were making that point.
People were downplaying that. Like, yes, there's a little fucking revenge. I'd be concerned if there wasn't. You don't want to go out to them again.
No, the revenge aspect was half the reason. It was, I think the ratings came in. It was the most watched game of women's basketball maybe ever.
Maybe ever.
12 Here's million.
What's the deal with Sudeikis? Is he an Iowa fan, a Caitlin Clark fan, a Hoops fan? What?
So people were confused by this. So Sudeikis is a giant supporter of women's hoops in general. He goes to a lot of NBA games. He travels to a lot of college games. And this just must have been circled as a must watch for him. I get the confusion because he was having a great time. Like, so much were you like, is that Caitlin Clark's dad?
He was in Carver for a little bit too, for a game. So he's been in the mix. He's been about it.
Dude, Carver had an incredible year this year. You know, maybe their best. That they're, this is going to be a tough year to top with. You got Sudeikis in there. You got Travis Scott pulled up to a game. They hit the all-time highs right there. But Sudeikis played some hoops in college too. And yeah, just big supporter of the women's game. I don't know why the women's game, but yeah, you got to respect it.
And the thing that people are not talking about enough in the women's game is just like we talked about UConn, South Carolina's going to march to a national title on the women's side.
Hey, you don't think? I mean, Iowa somehow beat them last year. You don't think they get it done this year?
No, I don't. Truly. I think they're so good this year.
Just too much. You know, any individual women's players on that South Carolina team to call out, or is it just they play as a unit?
Just a cohesive unit. I don't know. Does Iowa beat UConn Friday night? Are you?
I'm more excited about that game than this potential South Carolina rematch.
Yeah.
I mean, Paige Beckers is back on the map.
Are you a Paige fan? Yeah. You're a Paige guy? You said she was giving all the glory to God?
Oh, I see. Hey, might be. You're trying to set me up here. I just was watching a little something about Paige Beckers after that win against, who was it, USC last night. And shout out Juju. She played great from what I watched. I'm not going to lie. I was basketballed out after that Caitlin Clark performance. That's what I wanted to see. Nobody could really match that. But I think this Paige Beckers and Caitlin Clark matchup could be crazy. A lot of people are now just re-remembering Paige Beckers, who, you know, 3 years ago when they played in the NCAA tournament, UConn beat Iowa, and Paige Beckers was considered like the best girl. This girl's changing the game. Tears her ACL, has a terrible ACL, blew her knee out. Yeah, just, you know, bad stuff. And she was talking to a reporter yesterday. And I'll read the whole quote, but we'll get to the good part. So she said, so much gratitude. You know, I'm a living testimony. I give all the glory to God. He works in mysterious ways. Last year, I was praying to be back at this stage. He sent me trials and tribulations, but it was to build my character. It was to test my faith to see if I was a believer. And I just kept on believing. I did all I could so God could do all I couldn't. And that last line right there, that's Drake's going to steal that line and put it in a song soon, because that was a hard bar right there.
What do you think about that? How do you feel? Because it feels like nowadays, anytime you give an athlete the mic, their first move is to thank God. And I'm not saying it's a good or a bad thing. Sometimes I just want somebody to say, this shit's all me. I did this. You just witnessed greatness, and I fucking did it. Is that an insane thing every now and then?
So you're just looking for our Kendrick Lamar in the college basketball sports world.
Am I coming off anti-Christ when I say that? Because I'm not. But sometimes just fucking say, I'm the dog. I did this. This is all me.
Yeah, I don't know. Fuck the big three. It's just big me.
Just big me. I don't know. That's where I'm coming from. I need a little more fire. That was my biggest thing last night in that LSU-Iowa game. I wanted it to be a little more chippy.
And I think that's why it wasn't, because they knew people were just waiting for any moment of, oh, they don't like each other. They're just playing nice. Right. And we didn't get it. On your point of the thanking God, I totally get it, just because it's the classic, you know, good guy thing to do. Whether you believe it or not, I think just letting the world know, like, hey, it wasn't me. It was God. People respect you a little more there.
Do you think people say it that don't believe it?
Yeah. I do wonder if if people do say it when they don't really believe it too much. Because when you look at it, a lot of successful people, what they do, they're wearing the Jesus piece, Kodak Black, and they're just giving thanks to God after a win.
I'm not confident Kodak Black has God on his side anymore.
Yeah, you never know. You think he's on demon time?
God might abandon him for now. He might circle back.
I think he's going to circle back. Kodak seems like a good guy. He's just always doing that God Kodak move. Oh, Kodak, I don't like to see me winning. They just don't want to see him winning. And that's why. That's why.
Do you think you could give a Kodak Black themed sermon at church next Sunday if I gave you all week to prepare? 20 minutes?
Yes. Yeah, because he's probably been through stuff in life, and I think that's the most important angle I'd take on the sermon.
I'd lock into your Kodak Black sermon.
And I think that'd put him right back on the Jesus piece map. He'd be a believer again. But, you know, I do think that some people say it when they don't fully believe it. On the flip side of that, I also think that some of these athletes, when they're just going crazy, so focused in like that, don't you think it would help so much to just – you got to have that belief in yourself. And they do. But having that, like, higher power belief, you think that elevates their game a little? You know, knowing like they believe so much that they can do it because they're like, God's going to do it through me. And so they kind of take on a little divinity at that point.
Yeah, I think that's a phenomenal way to put it. I think there's definitely something to be said about that and using it to help their confidence. I would like to see some of their, how much time they spend maybe in Bible study or reading the Bible every week. Just to see if they're for real or not. I think they should have to, if you shout out God post-game, you should have to release your Bible app activity.
You know what they'd say, though, that's just not how they practice. That's not how they practice their faith. That's probably what they'd say.
And that's probably fair, but some people might see that as a cop-out.
I think that's what it is. I think there's just something about being in that sports, that level of sports where, like, everybody, all your coaches – whoever it is putting that emphasis on you. Like, you got to, one, believe in God. It goes God, family, and then sport. And so that's what they're thinking about all the time. They're just being drilled to throw out the Jesus.
Imagine if someone wants stuff and they're like, first things first, I want to thank Satan.
Everyone's like, oh, shit. Quick way to become the most hated player in America, probably. But in our day and age, you never know. You could get some weird people online, like, you fuck with that.
You'd get a 50-50 crowd, I think. I think you'd get some fucking weirdos on your side. I personally think you get some weirdos on your side both ways.
You'd probably get Lil Uzi Vert in your corner. That's for sure. On the Satan's corner.
Not a bad guy to have in your corner. Cardi?
No. Yeah, you'd get Cardi, too. And then a lot of other people in that conspiracy mix.
Larry David's an atheist. I don't know if I don't think he's a Satan worshiper, so I don't think you're going to get him.
Larry David's an atheist?
Does that shock you?
With how much they talk about, yes, when you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm,
that shocks
the
you?
Whole show is like centered around Judaism. He's like, oh, welcome to the club. Because I guess it's more of a cultural thing. That's probably what he's talking about. Like, welcome to the culture of being a Jew rather than the religion and practicing that actually. Okay, it doesn't shock me that much.
You've been watching
it. Kind of shocked me. Yeah, I've been liking it too.
I think it's the best season yet.
See, I liked last season's a little more. I gotta go through and watch everything. I just know right now, and it might be because it's too fresh, it's not my favorite for me right now. I am glad that, hey, Curb spoilers here right now. I'm only on episode like 5 or 6. Curb spoilers real quick, just skip 30 seconds ahead if you want to miss it. I'm glad Irma's gone. Glad that girl's out of here.
Yeah.
I hope she's gone forever. She sucked and she was gross to look at.
I got sick of her. I think as much as Larry was sick of her, we were all more sick of her.
Is there a good Curb Your Enthusiasm to college basketball comparison we're missing right now?
No, I don't think so. I don't know that you can compare Curb to anything.
Do you think any of these players in the Final Four really like Curb?
I'd be concerned.
Anybody,
Who? I'd be concerned if there wasn't at least four people on each team that get together, smoke a joint, and watch Curb together.
Right, because Curb's that's a community watching event. Like, you sit down, it's a great show to watch with other people. I hope I have a weird feeling DJ Burns could really be into Curb. I weirdly feel like UConn is probably the most out of touch with Curb. They probably like it the least.
Wasn't LD at the UConn game? What game was he at?
I don't know. I see him on TV all the time, though.
He was at a game last weekend. We were having this discussion. And
is it JB Smoove?
No, JB Smoove dominates the commercial space, though. We're going to go on a little Curb tangent here.
Wait, isn't JB Smoove the guy in Curb?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Same page.
Yeah. We were having the discussion. Jeff is just as bad as Larry because he agrees with everything Larry says.
I think Jeff's worse than Larry. If we're going character on character, you know, you see a lot of Jeff being unfaithful, telling lies. Say what you want. Larry's not being unfaithful. Say that. You follow it up with he's the man.
Yeah, I mean, not my best look there. No doubt about it. Luckily, I don't think our 75 listeners, any of them are women.
Yeah, if you're listening, please share this with a fellow friend. Let's try to get to 76 this time.
Yeah, 75 listeners, we'll take those numbers.
Let's put a pin in this Curb Your Enthusiasm topic. Let's pick it up next weekend. Maybe think on this more, see if anything stands out. Because, I mean, we bring this up because Larry David was at the UConn, what was it, UConn San Diego State game. Did you hear about that?
He was at one of the games. He has legs. He was pissed that they put him on the big screen.
He was definitely, I mean, just having so many Larry David moments. He was yelling at the San Diego. He's obviously a UConn fan is what I was picking up. He was yelling at the UConn team. Actually, you know what? Now that I'm going to say these things, I don't know who he cheers for. Because he's like he's a California guy, so he could be a San Diego fan. But he was just shouting at UConn for being disrespectful for not taking their starting five out like way sooner. Just yelling, take them out. The game's over. He was yelling at San Diego State really early into the game, like, change your game plan. It's just not working. And then just being the ultimate troll to Dan Hurley, who had to have been annoyed but was ignoring it the whole time. But I mean, are we surprised? Yeah. Said it. He's a shit talker.
He's a shit talker. Born and raised shit talker.
I hope we see him at a game this weekend at the Final Four. We could. Stay tuned. We'll come back to this Curb Your Enthusiasm talk. Clark, can we do a quick corner of, you know, what's been going on in the college basketball world? I think you got one little transfer portal news to throw out there right away.
Bronny James is on portaling.
He's going in the portal. That means he could go to any other school.
Future clone.
You heard it here, folks. So Bronny James being in the portal, there's no way he's going to Ohio State. There's no way he's going to the league. The destination could be confirmed. He's going to the clones. Because he's already going to he's going to Iowa State.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's why. But if he wasn't, yeah, then Ohio State's probably really high up there because, you know, Bron still got connections there. And
Is Duquesne high up there?
No, not after losing their head coach.
But do you know who took over as head coach?
Oh, who did?
Drew Joyce, second or the third. LeBron James' high school teammate. High school point guard is the new head coach
there. No way.
So I don't think so. I don't think he goes there. I think that'd be too far of a step down. But interesting.
He's in the mix, though. That would be really interesting. And I think Bronny would get as much shade as he'd get. That'd be a good guy move out of Bronny because he was bad at USC, but he definitely should not be going pro right now. I can tell you that.
No, I don't think so either. Omaha's gone portaling. I don't know where he ends up. I think West Virginia, but who the fuck knows?
Are you surprised by the Omaha, you know, Iowa State's only five-star recruit, sat a whole year, played some meaningful minutes, but obviously needed to develop and grow in that system? Are you surprised he's leaving?
I think he must have been told that there's not going to be a space for him next year.
How, though?
I think, unfortunately, he just might not be a good college basketball player. Happens
happens all the time. Mm-hmm. I think, unfortunately, he just might not be a good... Because if he was, and if he was expecting to get time next year, why would he go to a whole new program and start over?
So that's the route you... Or that's what you choose to believe?
I think so.
I like that.
I know Odds has conversations with the guys every year, basically tells them what the next year looks like for him.
So I would think definitely feel... That makes me feel a lot better about him departing, that he's departing just because he wasn't good, or not because he wasn't good, but, you know, had that conversation, knew his role wouldn't be as meaningful and he could be more, you know, potentially impactful somewhere else.
I think he'll still get a bag. Someone will give him a bag. He's still five-star going into his sophomore year. Still can just say he wasn't used right or whatever it is. And that might be the case. I hope that's the case. I hope he goes somewhere and is super successful. I just don't know that he is very good at college level, but I hope he figures it out.
I was super sad to hear the news, but now that I have that angle in mind, I'm feeling a little better about it. Hopefully we hit the portal hard and looking for the clones to be back next year. We haven't been back to discuss that game, nor do we have the time to right now, but a goddamn heartbreaker. Clones lost that game for themselves, shot themselves in the foot there. Hard to win when you can't make shots, but real quick, we got to do the update that Michigan and Louisville, since we last talked, they now have head coaches. Kenny Payne was fired from Louisville. Juwan Kenny Howard, Payne, he's gone.
Kenny Payne got a sweet buyout.
Yeah, did you see those details? He's making $7 million over the course of the next year.
He gets like $230K every month until like late 2027, I believe.
That's what it is.
Can you imagine?
Holy shit.
Can you imagine the levels of chilling you'd be doing if you were just had an automatic quarter mil coming in every month? Why can't...
Is he even going to be a coach anywhere else? Like, do you think... if he coaches somewhere else, does that team have to buy him out?
I don't know.
That'd be interesting.
I don't know how that works compared to football, but I would guess his contract's terminated.
Oof.
So I would guess no. Like, I think he could take a new job and still keep getting that money and get double pay. I don't know, though. Don't ask me. I have no fucking idea.
And it'll be tough to see if anybody does take a swing on him. When he got fired, people were trying to be really nice to him in the sports media world, but it was just a long time coming.
Yeah.
Well, a long time. Notable hires. I like Dusty May going there. And I like Vlad Golden, the big man on FAU. He entered the transfer portal. He's probably going to Michigan. Hasn't been announced. Why wouldn't he just follow his old coach? But potential future Cyclone, because he is in the transfer portal. And you said Darian DeVries going to West Virginia. I like the Dusty May hire. I will say we got to pour one out for FAU. I don't think they're going to. That sucks.
I kind of hate the Dusty May hire. I don't think he's going to be good there. I'm putting the over-under at 3 years of Dusty May in Ann Arbor.
Both of these hires are super interesting because none of the big coaches that people were throwing the names out, which I'd have never understood that, throwing the big name. These coaches are doing well at their schools. They're not going to leave.
Now, I am hearing and seeing things that Musselman is going to end up at USC. He's interviewing with him tomorrow. I think they'll throw him a bag. I think he's going to go to USC. And you know what? We're actually going to break that here. Eric Musselman to USC.
Yeah, you heard it here first. That makes so much sense in my head. Arkansas, he's done so many great things for that program.
He's a bag chaser, too. Bag chaser.
He's a bag chaser. Hey, shout out. Way to go, Eric Musselman, the new head coach of USC.
University of Southern California Trojans.
Way to go. And then on the flip side, so I actually remember it was Baylor's assistant coach, another Baylor assistant, John Jackis. He is now the FAU head coach. So who knows? Good things could happen. But FAU, I'm ready to put them in the past a little bit. You know, they had their 1 year, and it was so good that we continue to talk about them for another year. Let's see what happens.
I'm okay never talking about them again.
Louisville, on the other hand, out of nowhere, this maybe the biggest college basketball brand program in the nation, you know, with an open, vacant head coaching position, hired Charleston's head coach, Pat Kelsey.
Yeah.
And say what you want. The guy's a winner at every level that he's been at. I think this is definitely a huge step up from Charleston, but Charleston's made the tourney past 2 years.
Everything I heard is that Charleston was one of the most desirable jobs in the country. It's a great city, great facilities, up and coming. I heard it floated around that it has the possibility to be the Gonzaga of the East Coast.
You're hearing that?
I'm hearing that. That is legitimately things that I've read.
Now, great I think city, they're still looking facility, for a head coach.
Great fan base. I believe they hired Did Mac.
Did they hire somebody since the time I looked into this?
Yeah. They hired Chris Mack, who used to be the LSU coach or Louisville coach.
Okay. So he's coming back now into the game.
So they kind of.
And then other notable losses, I guess, are Drake Bulldogs, Darian DeVries left, but they hired all time D2 Ben McCollum. I think it was the.
Four national titles?
Five.
Yeah. He's going to be good there. That's a fun step up for him.
That's a huge win for Drake, because I'm pretty sure he's a highly touted guy. And it's perfect just to go from Missouri to Des Moines. I've heard it was Ben's dream job. Like, he's been waiting for this position to go be vacant. Now he's got it. You know, I think he's got everything going for him. But it will be interesting to see how he has to deal with NIL. I don't think he'd probably deal with that too much in the D2 world of college basketball. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of what's going on around the world right now.
They got a good donor base in Des Moines. They'll be all right. That's a good mid-major job. Always will be.
Last one I do got to say is we got to have a villain moment here for the school of SMU in general, Southern Methodist University. Kind of bad guy move. This happened a while ago, but we never talked about it. At the end of the year, after a 20-13 season, they fired their head coach, Rob Lanier. He coached two seasons there, was good. I don't know what SMU is expecting if a 20-13 season isn't cutting it. You know, maybe they were really just thinking they are that school and they are him. But you're not. You're still SMU. So I don't get why you fire people after winning seasons like that. We got to have a villain moment for them.
Hey, and SMU's got a lot of money. They got a lot of money down there.
I think they're still looking for a head coach, but SMU's head coach, Rob Lanier, is that right? SMU picked somebody up?
Yeah. Andy Enfield, the former USC coach.
That's right. That's you. Okay. You know what? This is all coming together now. Maybe I take this villain moment away. Well, it still is a villain moment because they fired a winning coach, but you think they were talking to Andy like, we'll just cut him. We'll fire him so quickly if you want to come here.
Looking across the bar, nodding their head at the door with them. You think that's what they were doing?
Yeah, I 100% do. Okay, this has gone full circle. This all makes sense now. But this is – we're wrapping it up here. You know, not just on this pod, but with the season. It's the final four, and then we got games to be played. It'll probably be a next Monday, Tuesday kind of game.
Yeah.
But it's been a good ride. It's been a good journey, and – God, I don't want it to end. So get ready for us next time. We'll be bringing all the energy because I'll be super ramped for whoever's playing who in the national tournament. I will say it will be a little weird if it's Alabama, NC State. I'll be a little thrown off the whole pod. But without further ado.
It'll be beautiful. We want to thank our 75 listeners that have been tuning into us all season. Truly humbled. An honor to have you along this ride with us. Feels a little bit like Fast and Furious. Feels like we're all one big family at this point. So we thank you for that. We look forward to the season wrapping up next week. But the season doesn't end because it always lives in our hearts. Throughout the summer, we might do other things. Eat hot dogs. Go to baseball games. Go out on a lake. But deep, deep in our soul, college basketball rests. I'd say it hibernates. It waits. And then, as the leaves start to change, it gets closer and closer to the surface until it is one with us again. And it's who we are, and it's what we do. So we have one more week. Continue to let it be what you do, but don't lose your college basketball this summer. just tuck it away and let it hibernate. We look forward to seeing you next Monday. I'm loving the pop-offs.